Thank you, Honor, and good afternoon, everyone. We're so excited to open our Wednesday webinar series this year with Lee Jenkins. Sometimes we have people on our program that are doing a webinar for us that I may not have met before, but fortunately for me in my career, I have had the opportunity to be in some workshops with Dr. Jenkins, and also to just sit down and have some face-to-face conversations. And so I can honestly tell you from my personal experience with Lee that he is so genuine, so on target with what he is going to tell you today about growth mindset and how to get kids really enthused and excited about being at school. You know, a long time ago, there used to be this country song. I think Barbara Mandrell sang that was, I was country before country, you know, was cool. And I always think that Lee Jenkins was that way kind of about data, because he's been talking about the power of that for a long time and getting students involved in that. And so I'm really excited for him to share his knowledge with you today. So welcome, Lee Jenkins.
Thank you. Thank you, Gracie. It's good to be here. And I'm glad that we have been together over the years. Yes, thank you. So we're going to talk about how to create a perfect school. The cover of the book, and by the way, you've received a note, the book is very small. The price will be zero for 2 days. But there's the cover. The cover is Angie Wilner. She's a grade one teacher in Fremont. And she's checking her kids. She showed in her left hand, she's showing the effect size of with four Unifix cubes representing the average learning from Johnny's research of 250 influences on learning. And in her right hand is the effect size that's from the average classroom, and it's also her classroom. So we're going to talk about the title, Perfect. It sounds like kind of a strange title, but let's talk about it. We want to start with what perfect be. So after we decide what would perfect be, we say, oh, we will never be perfect. Then we say, well, where are we now? And then we kind of zoom in, kind of a crummy word for right now, but we zoom in on what is we do in that stage between where perfect is and where we are now. So in the book, How to Create a Perfect School, I have to start off with, well, what would a perfect school be? Knowing that none of us will ever have a perfect school, but what would perfect be? And for me, perfect would be that the intrinsic motivation that children bring with them to kindergarten is maintained for 12 more years. They still have that same intrinsic motivation when they're in senior high school and they haven't lost it. That would be perfect. And if we don't know what perfect is, we grab ideas and it doesn't always work out so well. Here's a student who wrote, this is the rainbow that didn't know how to make a bend. It's a mess. And sometimes it looks like that because we have this good idea this year and another good idea the next year and another good idea, but none of them are leading us closer to perfect. So no matter what you're working on, a better reading program, or what would perfect online be in this time would be, what would perfect blended be, what would it be, where are we now, and then we save our energy and time to say, well, how can we get closer and closer and closer? From Dr. Deming, he tells us that 95% of our problems come from the system. They come from the way we do things. When he says system, he's not talking about the federal government and the state government. He's talking about just the way we manage classrooms and the way we've done it. And then he said, if everyone did their best, 95% of our problems would still be the same. He further said, there's two kinds of problems. There are special and common ones. He said that he'd like 95%, but 95% of our problems are common. Everybody listening to this has the same issue. And then 5% of our problems are special. Well, certainly our culture social problem, the virus and all the things that it has done to our schools. That's what we're thinking about, and rightly so. But when the virus is passed and we're back into full-time in-person learning, there's common problems that are still there. And I'm going to talk about common problems and once in a while refer to the environment that we're currently in. But remember, if everybody did our best, these common problems would still exist. Now, the first part of the book, obviously, is about intrinsic motivation. Because if perfect would be that the kids maintain that intrinsic motivation they brought with them to kindergarten, then let's talk about intrinsic motivation. John Hattie renamed this data. He calls it the Jenkins curve. And just about every time he speaks, he shares what he calls the Jenkins curve. I surveyed from my seminars and speaking 3,000 teachers, and I asked two questions. What grade level do you teach? And what percent of the kids at your grade level love school? And by love school, we could say they still had the intrinsic motivation they had when they started kindergarten. Well, look at that. It goes down every year until we get a low of grade 9. If Carol Dweck were here, I think she would say to us, that's the result of a fixed mindset. I'll show you some pictures of a fixed mindset in a little bit, but it happens, it just continually happens, and every year a few more kids drop off and say, I don't care about this anymore. For me, I don't call it the Jenkins curve, I call it the pain train. And my objective is to derail the pain train and replace it with growth, with hope slopes. That's what we're going to replace it with, hope slopes. I want us to be done with this mess called the pain train. That's written by a kindergartner. So Don gave us skill, will, and thrill. Skill, will, and thrill. So if we know that our job is to measure the skill. We know that. That's our job, to measure skill. But the problem is the students are in charge of the will. We're not. And if there's no thrill from receiving the skill, then they lose their will. So from John Hattie's influence, we have the will and the thrill matrix. And children tell us, self-assessment, how hard they're working from not trying at all to I'm coasting to I'm all in. And on the thrill of learning, it goes from I hate it all the way to I love it. And they do honestly tell us where they are with their intrinsic motivation. On my website, there is a tab that says perfect. And when you click on that, there are resources for the different chapters in the book, How to Create a Perfect School. And this is in chapter 3. And these are little bitty matrices. You print off 15 on a sheet of paper, and each kid gets a little one, and they put one dot on it where they feel their effort is and where their joy is, their will or their thrill. And we gather up all these little minis. And if you look there at that picture in the upper right, you see the thumb and a forefinger of a student with all the little minis and reads off. There's no names on them, just reads off and says one student's dot is here. And then in the picture, you can see there's a dot recorded for every student. We're able to get a picture like this, every teacher, to see what the intrinsic motivation is like in my classroom. Where are we? Instead of saying my job is to motivate the kids to learn, we want a mindset that says they came to us in kindergarten already motivated, and my job is to maintain it, or if they've lost their intrinsic motivation, then my job is to to restore it, do my best to work with the kid to restore it. Now, we know that if we're trying to motivate them, we use incentives or bribes, whatever word you use, or power. But if we're trying to restore their intrinsic motivation, we do it with listening. We listen to their ideas and see if that will help to restore their intrinsic motivation. And so on that tab for chapter 3, you will see a will and thrill feedback. The students tell us what helped me work harder. And this might help us, this idea might help us work even harder. And then what would help us learn more? And then this could help us enjoy it even more. So when you give these to students, the idea is to say to the kids, you know, there's a bunch of you and there's one of me. I will read every one of these and I will implement one or two of your ideas and we will see if it helps us. So intrinsic motivation is huge. Our job, they come to us motivated and our job is to maintain it. So the next part of the book talks about what is it that we as educators inherited that is destroying intrinsic motivation? Nobody listening to this is old enough to have recreated what I'm going to share with you today. But what is it we inherited that are destroying intrinsic motivation? And it's not enough to talk about what will destroy it without also talking about what are we going to replace that with, and I will do that in part 3. But destructive habits. We use data for harm. You're going to learn later about data for joy, but we often use data for harm. This is one that just, it kills me to have taken this picture. But in the hallway, outside the main door to the school, is a set of graphs. It's a gumball machine and paper for every student in kindergarten. And for what they've learned, they color in the gumballs. And so you can see in October of kindergarten, think about it, in October of kindergarten, everybody knows that Ian is a winner kid and Judah is a loser kid. Not only that, you see in the middle, there's a ranking. So we think like it's adults playing professional baseball, where we rank the teams. No, this is five-year-olds and they're ranked. And we see winners and losers start. It's data for harm. Now, the teacher is not doing this on purpose. The teacher is not saying, how can I use data to harm my kids? No, the idea was this is going to motivate them. Well, it motivates some and demotivates the kids who most need motivation. So there's kindergarten. Then the kid goes off to first grade, and the teacher has a bulletin board up there. It's a bulletin board. There's a helmet for each of the kids in the room. And the helmets are moving from the 0-yard line all the way to the 100-yard line for a touchdown. In the room, you instantly see that there's 4 kids on the left that haven't moved their helmet. They're the loser kids. The kids that are moving along and the winners at the right. So every day when this first grader walks in, well, I was a loser in kindergarten and there it is again. I'm a loser in grade. And now I go to second grade. And well, the teacher has, what's there in second grade? We have a dartboard. And there's all the winner kids in the middle of the dartboard. And then there's the kids off to the side who never hit the target. And then I go to third grade and it's a baseball field. We have the home run kids and the strikeout kids. Data for harm. Done with the best of intentions to motivate and it completely backfires on us. Then there's permission to forget. I'm going to give you 3 habits we inherited. We inherited a forgetting system, not a remembering learning system. You would think we could, as a society, we could get this figured out. Hot dogs come in packages of 8 and buns come in packages of 12. Why couldn't we get this better? Why couldn't we? But we don't. It stays as a disconnect. Now let's look at an education disconnect. Students are accountable for their short-term memory. And everybody listening to this, you and I together, we're accountable for the kids' long-term memory. So when the results come out in the newspapers, it's saying whether or not we as educators have been successful with the kids' long-term memory. But the kids get by. If kids are all getting by with short-term memory, and it starts with spelling. A grandma on Friday afternoon had her granddaughter for the weekend. The granddaughter had a backpack there. Grandma went to the backpack and said, "Oh, honey, I see you had a spelling test." "Yes, grandma." "Huh. You only missed 2 words. Sweetheart, let's work on these 2 words." And what did granddaughter say, who'd been in first grade for 5 weeks? "No, grandma, we don't need those any words anymore. We're done with them." So if kids think that it's not about learning anymore, it's just a game of what you can know on Friday, half of them at least disconnect. They don't care anymore. Might be interesting experiment. I had a teacher who wrote me and said, "I gave my spelling test 2 hours later." The same one, 2 hours later. I couldn't believe what they'd forgotten in 2 hours. Because they don't know they're supposed to learn them. Permission to forget is one of the huge problems. And then we have bribes. This was taken in a teacher supply store, this picture. So the owner of a teacher supply store knows the teachers are more willing to spend their personal money on stickers than just about anything else. Huh. I'd like you to, just for a moment, think, how many incentives do the children in your school receive per day? Think about it. How many incentives do children receive per day? You could take your phone and the calculator, put that number in, multiply it by the number of days in a school year, and multiply that by 13 years, unless you have a pre-K, and then you multiply it by 14. I get numbers from 3 incentives a day all the way to up to 20, the most common being 5. Huh. If it's 5 incentives a day for 180 days for 13 years, kids are receiving over 10,000 incentives in their school career. Is it working? Well, we know it's not. So I have to think of something to replace. So I'm going to, as we move on, we're going to replace data for harm. We're going to replace the permission to forget. And we're going to replace the bribery and incentives. By the way, one of the good things, and most of it's negative, about the time we're in with the virus. But one of the good things about it is the kids aren't seeing a bulletin board that shows that they're a loser. I hope we use this time that when they come back full time for in-class learning, those bulletin boards are never there again. The data a child is doing as an individual belongs in their individual data folder. What goes on the wall, and you'll see it, is how the class is doing, not how the individuals are doing. We've got to dump some things we inherited. I'm glad to get to part 3 because this is the positive part. What do we do to replace this? What do we do? And I will share that with you. The tomato worm has diarrhea. How do I know? Because I'm cleaning it up, written by a first grader. And that's what we have to do. We have to clean up this mess. There's some words that I hear in education, and let's just look at that. Cover that means I talked about it once. I mentioned it. Then there's a little better than that, but not much better, is I taught it, but the kids all forgot it. And what we're after is I taught it, they learned it, and they remember it. That's what I'm after. I mentioned the triplet that John had. He gave us a skill, will, and thrill. Here's the other one. It's powerful. Surface, deep, and transfer learning. Sometimes we hear people talk about it as if it's surface versus deep learning. No. Surface is the foundation for deep learning. But it has to be remembered surface learning. It can't be covered surface learning. It has to be remembered surface learning to be the foundation for deep learning. An example that's in the book that you can download for free tomorrow or Friday is that teacher, fifth grade, says to students, the fire marshal's coming tomorrow. And she's going to want to know what percent of the walls are covered by paper. So that's our math. We got to figure out what percent of the walls are covered by paper in here. Now, to do that, there's some surface learning that's there. You have to know what area means. You have to know how to multiply. You have to know how to subtract. You have to know how you get this area of a rectangle or whatever shape is on the wall. There's a lot of surface knowledge necessary in order to do the deep problem. Here's my advice to people in this time in our history. I would advise that teachers stay with surface learning the first quarter. That's actually the advice I'd give no matter what. But in a normal time, I would say that the surface learning is grade level the first quarter, and the deep learning questions come from the surface learning the prior year. But for now, if you're on an online environment, I'd say stick with surface learning. And why? Because the deep learning is connected to the environment. In a classroom, kids are working together on a deep assignment, such as what's the volume of a school cafeteria. They're working together on that problem. Whereas if they're at home, then the deep learning assignments are going to be different than if they're in a school. But if we start with surface learning for the first quarter, then we can adjust and begin to implement some deep assignments, deep learning assignments with what they learned first quarter in surface. So I've shared skill, will, and thrill, and I've shared surface, deep, and transfer. The process I'm going to share with you is called L2J. We are going to assess kids continually throughout the year on what we want them to know at the end of the year. We're going to assess their long-term memory, not their short-term memory. So if you ask kids questions now on what you want them to know at the end of the year, you're going to get an L-shaped curve. If you look at this sample that's here, most of the kids got zero right, some got one right, some two, some three, but most of them, the biggest number got nothing, made nothing correct. It's an L-shaped curve. The bell curve is for the middle of the year. It's entirely inappropriate for the middle of the year. And what we want at the end of the year is the J curve. If, and we'll talk a little bit more about effect size as we go through this, but in classrooms that actually go from an L curve through the bell to a J curve at the end of the year, the effect size is 10 times the average from Hattie's research. So what do we do in order to focus on long-term memory, remembered long-term memory of surface learning? First thing we do is we're going to write down what we want the kids to know at the end of the year. Notice at the bottom of the screen, I crossed out the word trivia. I know that the people who are talking about deep versus surface, in their mind, they're thinking of surface learning as trivia. And unfortunately, there is a lot of trivia in the surface learning the kids are supposed to answer from chapter tests. But our job is to give them the essential key concepts, the trivia gone. The difference between essential and trivia is a value judgment. So let me give an example, my favorite example. Many times kids are asked to memorize states and capitals. My opinion is memorizing states and capitals is trivia. If you want to know the capital of New Hampshire, look it up. However, if you're given a blank map of the United States, you should know where New Hampshire is. That's the essential. The trivia is, what's the capital? Now, it's not trivia. What happens in a capital city that happens in no other city in the whole state? That's not trivia. But what town it is in all 50 states, that's trivia. So let's focus on what is essential. That takes a lot of thought. What is it's essential? I'm going to teach some trivia because it's interesting and fun, but you're not accountable for it. So there it is. There's the spelling words for the whole year, given the first week of school year to students. There's the vocabulary for the whole year for a kindergarten class. There is a grade 8 science teacher. I think Jeff Burgard had over 100 key concepts in 8th grade science. There's the first 4, just big enough so you can read it. There's a geography teacher, 4 of 80 or 90 key concepts in geography for the year. What's the math to know by the end of the year? We tell them, this is what you're going to know at the end of the year. And then we're going to assess the long-term memory. We don't need to spend a bunch of time assessing what the kids know in their short-term memory. Because then they come up with the idea, I don't need to know this anymore. I just have to know it for the quiz. We're going to assess their long-term memory. So how do we do that? It's done with random assessment. It's random. They don't know what's coming up. So here's a kindergarten picture. Every week, these kids are quizzed one-on-one with 3 letters, 3 sounds, 3 sight words, and 3 numerals to read. They're pulled at random out of those pots, those flower pots. Pulled out. It's random. When you assess random, you're assessing long-term memory. When you just assess what you taught that week, you're assessing short-term memory. Here is this for the spelling words. I showed you the list of spelling words earlier. Every one of those words is on a card, and they're in a hamster ball. It's time for the spelling test. The kids number their paper. It's a grade 4. There's 400 spelling words for the year. 20 are pulled out at random, and that is the spelling test. So by the end of the year, what the teacher is after is that by the end of the year, I can pull out any 20 at random, and almost every kid in the room will be able to spell them, and they haven't studied them. Why? Because they know it. And there is, from Delaware, there's spray-painted lima beans. The key concepts are number. Reach in there and pull out a dozen of them. Those are the items that are going to be quizzed that week. They're long-term memory. And here is, I love this one. It's a high school example of world history, but it'll work with history in any grade level, whether it's state history in 4th grade, U.S. history in 5th grade, whether it's 8th grade, U.S. history. It'll work in any year. The teacher has 65 historical events that she's going to teach for the year. She has them all on a tongue depressor in that jar. She pulls out 8. Now, how do you know how many to pull out? How many you pull out is a square root. So with 400 spelling words, you pick out 20. With 66 historical events, 8's about the square root, you pull out 8. Whatever the number is for the year, the square root's how many you pull out at random each week, and it gives you a really good assessment. And so, at the beginning of the year, you get a beautiful L because they can't put any of these things into chronological order. But by the end of the year, they can. States. This is on my website for free. It's under PowerPoints there that are free to download and use. It's for the 50 states. You pull a number at random. Click on that number. And when you click on it, up comes a map of the United States with an arrow pointing to a state. Funny thing, I pointed to Arizona. That's where I live. And the kids have... There's 50 states, square root of that's about 7. They're quizzed on 7 a week. And when the quiz is over, hit the space bar, and the answer comes up. And they are learning where the states are, not memorizing trivia, which is the capitals. So now, if we assess the kids I'm their long-term memory. What do we do with that data? The first thing is the students graph their own progress. That is the very first thing. That's a kindergarten. And you can notice in the beginning of the year, the teacher's done the graphing. And then week 10, the teacher turned it over to the kindergartner. I wonder if that kindergartner will be called Gracie someday. So, but then you see that yellow post-it note? That's there so that when the kindergartner colors over the line, it doesn't crowd out the space for the next column. If you want assessment capable students, which gives us three times the learning from John Hattie's research, assessment capable students, then we can't buy expensive computer programs to do the data. We can't have the teachers doing the data after school. The kids do the data during the school day, and that's how we get assessment capable students. Here you see from Wisconsin, an elementary student decided partway through the year could have more fun. And there you see a student from Wisconsin, and made a mistake, covered up the mistake with masking tape. And now, so the first job of the student is to graph how they did. When they get their scored paper back, they graph it. By the way, here's how you know if you're in a growth mindset or a fixed mindset school system. If you're in a fixed mindset school, when kids get a paper back from their teacher that's been scored, they look to see how many they missed. If you're in a growth mindset system, they look to see if they did better than they've ever done before. It's huge. When every time they get a paper back, they want to know, did I do better than I've ever done before? Did I have a personal best? But after that graphing that we just talked about, then there's a way to collect the data for the class. On these dots, this is a middle school teacher who did that with duct tape on the whiteboard. And the kids go out and put a dot for him, and he got right. Here's an elementary classroom. It is laminated chart paper. And they put a dot for how many they got right. And there you can see a kid putting his dot. And what do you do with that information? Well, the first thing we do is we count it up and see how the class did. How is our class doing altogether? So what goes on the wall in the classroom is not something that's embarrassing and destructive to our kids who need the most help. What we put up on the wall is how the class is doing. And every time you see a little survey, that means their class is better. And they get to celebrate. You'll see a picture. They get to have fun when the class does better than ever before. And it's everybody who has fun, not just some. There's a lot of things you can do with statistics, but the most powerful statistic tool we own is addition. Add it up. Notice there's a green line on there. What is that green? That green line's a goal for the year. Where'd that number come from? Actually, that number is a real number. It's the most right in spelling that this teacher has ever had from any prior year. And if you can beat the prior, it's like an athletic record that lasts in a high school for 20 years. It might last a long time, but it's a real number. It's not a made-up number. Nobody sat around in a committee and pulled a number out of the air. No, it's a real number, and they know that, and they want bragging rights. Here you see one from a fifth-grade science class, all-time best, ATB. ATB will be a more common word in your school than IEP. There you see a chart for a class that happens to be a high school one. But if I look at that, I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times they had in the class, they had an all-time best. And it's a thrill for them. It's adding it up. And then, so the three things that kids have to do after when they get their paper back, graph their own work, put a dot so we can add up the total for the whole class. And then if they had a personal best, they write their name on a shape. They write their name on a shape, and it goes up in the hallway. My personal best. I've been in lots of classrooms in October. You ask, has anybody not had a personal best yet? Nobody. Everybody's had a personal best so far. Doesn't matter if they went from one right to two right or they went from eight right to nine. They've had several personal bests. This is three first grades. They each of them have four of these quizzes, different subjects during the week. And every time a kid has an all-time best, they write their name on a green circle and they go out in the hallway. And the kids have to decide the path. They even went up over the ceiling and down on the other side of the hall. It's amazing what they do to celebrate all-time best. ATB, all-time best. I love it here. When the principal is the only one in the school that has the all-time best rubber stamp. And when the kids are working on projects, they come in and the kids get their, they know what's going to happen. The kid gets their individual graph out and the principal stamps it every all-time best. It creates these conversations between the principals and the kids on learning. All-time best, ATB. And then we get to celebrate when the class has an all-time best. It's not, if you do what I say, you get to go to the ice cream party, and if you don't, well, you get to stay behind. No, when the class has an all-time best, everybody celebrates. This teacher loves Ohio State band music where she went to college. She puts on the band music, and they do the wave. That's their classroom celebration. This is a teacher who likes cartwheels. I imagine you have some teachers in your school who would like to do cartwheels. First time they have an all-time best, she does a cartwheel. Second time, she does two. The last week of school, she had to do 17 cartwheels. You might not like that one so much. Angie Wildern, that you saw on the cover of the book, she took a swimming pool noodle, sliced it up, then took every slice, which is like a donut, and cut that into half. So they got a semicircle. She gives every kid a semicircle. They squeeze it because it's sponge. And let go, it pops up in the air. Squeeze it again, pops up in the air. Squeeze it again, it pops up in the air. And it's just a minute and a half of celebration. We had a class all-time best, and we go back to work. So it's data for joy, if you can get that theme. It is data for joy, not data for harm. There you can see there's a chapter in the book, near the end of the book, on Cody Aruda. She teaches grade 5, South Sioux City, Nebraska. There's a whole chapter on her. I've worked with her for over a dozen years. And one of the ways she celebrates all-time best is they sing a song with rounds. So the first time they have an all-time best, they have one motion. Second time they have an all-time best, they have two motions. Third time, three. By halfway through the year, they have to make up more motions because the song runs out of motions. Data for joy. This is a star and it's having a ball. That's the one every kid in your school is to say, I'm a star at this school, having a ball. All time best. Outside an elementary classroom is this laminated sheet of paper. That week, the class had 154 questions right in math and 112 questions right in spelling. Why is that out there? Because some kids are assigned, usually the oldest kids in the school, to come by and to collect that data. And what do they do with that? They make a graph that shows the whole school. How's the whole school doing? All of us all together, all-time best. And then the principal's job is to think, what can we do as a whole school to celebrate when all together we had an all-time best? And they come up with some very clever, creative ideas. Here's the whole school again. This one has that blue line across the top. What's that blue line? That's the best the school has ever done. It's with math standards. Six times they outperformed that. You can see that the blue line is going to be much higher for the next school year because it's going to get harder and harder. It's a real number. Try to do better than we've ever done before. How do you have a school-wide goal that every kid in the school cares about? That's how you do it. The scatter diagram. All the blank graphs that I'm talking about are on my website. They're free. You download them and use them. This is the scatter diagram. It is what we need for effect size calculation. So here's a scatter diagram before we shaded the blue lines. It's a dot for every kid for every one of the quizzes. and we do 7 quizzes a quarter. Teachers tell me that works. Every week it's too much. Every other week's not enough. Actually, the kids aren't happy with that. They'd like more quizzes. But for now, we're doing 7 a quarter. And so the kids then, now with the new graphs that we have with the shaded, they'd have dots exactly on there just like that, except they're shaded dots. The shaded dots are the shaded columns, I mean, for the first 3 quarters of the year. Then the first 3 quizzes of the year. Then the last 3 weeks of every quarter. And what do we do with that data? The students enter that data into an effect size calculator that's a Google Doc. Talk about improving intrinsic motivation. When kids put that data in there and you look at that class, you can see it there. They had a 0.8 at the end of the first quarter. That means their class has learned double what most classrooms across the world learn in a year. Wow. They are so excited about that. As young as first grade, we've had kids read the data off of the chart and somebody else puts it in there and it comes. If you want an effect size calculator for your school, write me an email. Tell me the name of your school so I can put it up on the heading. I'll send it to you. No charge. This is a J-curve. I can't tell you who is more excited about getting to a J-curve, the teacher or the students. I've been in the classrooms when they just found out they'd made it to a J-curve. It is a thrilling time. Even in kindergarten, they know what that means. If we all work together, we can get to a J-curve. And then if you need item analysis, you don't need a computer program to do it. The kids do it for you. So you can see on that particular one, the far left, concept number 28 was missed by 16 kids in the room. More kids missed that than any other question in the whole room. But then the second one there in the green column, this is from a fifth grade class, and the second most missed item was something from fourth grade. Oh, we got to deal with that one. Then polishing perfect. The last part of what we're doing is polishing perfect. You save a lot of time. Teachers tell me a quarter to a third of the instructional time is saved when the kids actually remember. So when you remember that, you save a lot of time. So when you save all this time, we can polish perfect. In other words, we can do things that even increase intrinsic motivation beyond what it's ever been. So the last part of the book that you're going to have for free, Kindle version, is how do we polish the learning is instructional ideas, not data, but instruction. The first one is giving choice. It's not a choice that says, kids, I don't have any idea what I want you to know this year. What do you think you want to learn? And I'll help you learn it. No. I gave you the key concept list. This is what we're working on. You can say, what we're working on this week are this item right here. Look at your paper out and look at it. That's the one we're working on this week. So I need an assignment. Your assignment is to prove to me you've learned it. I'm going to give you 3 ways you can prove to me you learned it. 3 ways. But if you've got another idea of how you can learn it, come talk to me. Wow, choice. My wife taught third grade for a period of time. She read historical picture books every week, a different one. This was on Lexington, Concord, the Minutemen. But they had a choice. Their job was to draw a picture that went with that story and to write about it and often use math manipulatives to do the art. You can see the pattern blocks there. Tangrams work really well for choice. Here's a dozen tangram pictures. Fill it in. Get the geometry right. Take the tangram template, reproduce it, embellish it if you want, and write about it because you chose something you want to write about. What word would you like to learn to read today? Here's a kindergartner who says, I want to learn to read my name. My name's Debbie. So the teacher wrote Debbie in the book, important word book. Debbie wrote it 5 times on a slate board, then wrote it once in the book and dictated a sentence to the teacher and drew a picture. What word do you want to learn? On our list is where you have to learn to measure with feet and inches, with meters and centimeters. But you get to choose what you want to major. Kid says, I want to know what the longest python's ever been. Found out it was 30 feet long. Took 30 rulers out of the can where they're kept, lined them all up in order, took the yarn, knew where the yarn was and the scissors, got the yarn, cut it, that was laid it out 30 feet long, and wrapped it around there. Huh. Also, on the page for perfect on my website, there's a chapter in this towards the end of the book that show talk about these books. And so it's their book covers. I want you to take a minute and just read that, those questions that are on there. We'll be back in a second. Then that's the cover of a booklet, and here is the inside of it. So what do the students do? They have a choice. They write the adjective they want. They write that adjective in a sentence, and they draw a picture. So they might have 6 or 8 adjectives in their booklet and their booklet cover. There must be 20 of these booklet covers on my website you can download and use, but certainly they're not all of the language arts things that we're going to be teaching from kindergarten through 8th grade. So others will have to be made up. But once you've got the idea, you can. So one of the things that polishes intrinsic motivation is choice. Another one is working with patterns. The kids all know brown bear, brown bear. But they studied the planets in their elementary classroom. So what did they do? Because they know that pattern, they wrote a booklet. All the kids contributed, they put it all together. Flaming sun, what do you see? I see tiny Mercury looking at me. Tiny Mercury, what do you see? It's patterns. They did that for the pilgrims. Pilgrim, pilgrim, what do you see? I see a ship. Ship, ship, what do you see? I see an ocean. Just through the whole story. And then there's patterns with math. The best synonym we have for math is patterns, and yet the kids don't see the patterns often. One of the very best things you could ever do with kids in 3rd, 4th grade to understand fractions is to have them count so they can see the pattern. Count by halves all the way to 10. 1/2. 2 halves equals 1. 3 halves equals 1.5. 4 halves equals 2. 5 halves equals 2.5. It sounds so boring to an adult, but it doesn't to kids because they're trying to figure out what this is all about. Then count by thirds all the way to 10. Count by fourths all the way to 10. Every time we're teaching something in math, look for the pattern. Let them see the pattern first. It will really polish your teaching. If you behave after lunch, I'll let you have another quiz. Now that sounds like a bribe. I was in the classroom when the teacher said this. It actually wasn't. She had excellent classroom control. She knew the kids were going to behave after lunch. But a kid said just before lunch, can we have another quiz? When have you ever heard that? And her smart mouth answer, which showed the rapport she had with the kids, was, well, if you behave after lunch, you can have a quiz, which is just another way of saying yes. And what was it with? It was with math fluency. Why in the world would kids want more math fluency quizzes? It's because they want to get an all-time best. And there are the math fluency quizzes. So what I've shared with you is we're going to eliminate harmful data and have joyful data. We're going to eliminate forgetting and have a learning system. We're going to eliminate bribes and have celebrations. And if we do that, our instruction will be effective, efficient, and engaging. We can go from surface to deep to transfer at plenty of time. And they because they kept their will because of the thrill. So if you want to stay in contact, I hope you do. If you go on my website on the bottom of the pages, there's all the social media. Click on the one that's your favorite. Or if you'll sign up for my email, you'll get, not exactly regularly, but you'll get emails from me. The next thing I'm going to do is kids will practice a whole lot more on math facts if some of the questions they can't solve. Some of the questions are impossible to solve because they keep working and working and working on an impossible problem. That'll be the next one that's going out. And then it's a free book the next 2 days. Go to Amazon, type in How to Create a Perfect School, click on the Kindle version, and tomorrow and Friday it'll be free. So now we've got time for some questions. And Dr. Branch, you're going to kind of summarize some of those questions and ask me, right?
Sure. And we haven't, you've just done such a good job. We don't seem to have any questions in the chat box, but we've got some time for our participants. So if you can think of something, this is a great opportunity to ask Lee firsthand.
Now, remember, we're looking at solving the common problems, not the special. By the way, here's what I want to say about the key concept list. Julie O'Terrell is a superintendent in Nebraska, four schools in her district. Hers is a comment on the back of the book from Julie. But she told me that when the closed, all the schools in the country were closed down, what an easier time her district had than all the surrounding districts around her. It was because of that key concept list. Because if there were 85 on the list and the teacher taught and gotten up to number 68 and the school closed, the kids all knew number 69 is next. And they just continued going. Now, they fumbled around with technology like everybody else. But as far as what am I going to teach, the kids knew what was next. And they just continued on going the rest of the year. So that or whether you're online or whether it's blended or whether you go part of the way one way, part of the year another way, if you start off with what I'm going to teach you for the year, it just saves so much headache.
Lee, that's what I really appreciate about your information today is you really gave principals or any of the participants in the webinar the how piece. And
yes.
A lot of times we hear what we need to do, but we don't really get the specifics of how to do it. And you've given us that information. You've provided templates via your website. Very generously, you're giving us a free Kindle version of your book, which we greatly, greatly appreciate. And it's just your specificity and what you shared today is just greatly appreciated.
And I can say, even if somebody decides they're going to buy a printed copy, which they can, obviously, it's nice to have the Kindle one on your phone because you're going to have conversations with people at a family event. And somebody says, well, what are you doing? And you want to show them something. Well, you've got the Kindle version. You can quickly go to the page and you can show them what it is. So even though I've written the books and I'm writing early readers now, I still go to Amazon and I buy a Kindle version, okay? So I can have it on my phone, so it's always there to share with people. So yeah, it's free for the next 2 days. And I hope people take advantage of it. Hope they tell their faculty. There's five chapters in there for parents. Tell your parent organization president, download it, look at it. Yes.
Well, and I also appreciate the information you shared can be still done in a virtual world because we know that people want to be back together with their students and their staffs face to face. But our reality is that many, especially for the first 9 weeks, are having to start back again in a virtual format. So any best advice, Lee, for the first time?
Okay, I think that the classroom graphs, the class total and all of that probably won't be there when in an online environment. But kids can still track their own work. And so when they come back together for second quarter, let's say they come back then and it's all in class, you have all that data because every kid has their own graph. And you can still add it up and say how we did first week. You can say, you two kids add up how we did the first week, and you two kids add up how we did the second week, and you kids add up how we did the third week. Mm-hmm. And you can reproduce those graphs. You have the data. And remember, it's assessment capable students triples the learning when they do it instead of the computer. I did want the computer. We have that Google Doc for effect size calculation. The kids do it all.
Any last comments, Lee, before we leave the webinar today?
Yeah, I see that somebody wrote in here on the chat that they'd like a copy of the Google Doc. And there's an email address there. will I have access to this when this is over, or do they need to write me again?
We can send out anything that you would like to the whole group, because when they register, we have everybody's email addresses.
Okay. So, yeah, that would be nice to be able to have that. I want to stay in contact with people. And so, just be sure everyone, my email address is on the screen now. And you send that to me, you'll be sure and get it.
Yes. Well, thank you very, very much.